The great palace of Darius at Persepolis was used by all subsequent rulers of Persia until it was burned in 330 BC by Alexander the Great, the conqueror of the Persian Empire. Even though the capital suffered much damage in the fire, it still stands as the most complete monument of Persian rule. At Susa, we find another palace built by Darius, and here the decoration is glazed brick, like the Neo-Babylonian Ishtar Gate that we discussed earlier. Stone is less readily available in Susa than it was in Persepolis. There are examples from the Susa gates from this palace now in the Louvre. In these scenes, we see not just the usual lions or dragons, but also rows of spear-bearers who have short, curly hair, beards, very richly colored garments, and gold bracelets. And these spear-bearers epitomize the image of what it was to be a Persian. You'll often see them illustrated in art books that discuss the Persians. The foundation text that Darius left in the palace at Susa records the different specialties of the groups that he brought to work on the palace. Darius writes, "The men who wrought the baked brick, those were Babylonians. Men who adorned the walls, meaning sculpted the walls, those were Medes and Egyptians." This listing of the groups who worked on the palace fits very well with the Persian attitudes towards their empire. These are the people who dwell within the lands of Persia. They contributed funds, labor, or other resources necessary to house the king in a proper setting. What's missing from these texts are references to Persians who contributed. And so we should think of these texts as very much the written version of what we see on the walls of the palaces, that the Persians are a special people and that others bring gifts to the king. In general, the Persian palaces are a way to demonstrate what resources a Persian ruler can command, either through trade or, in this instance, through empire. We have examined the idea of a Persian style as one that blends many different artistic and cultural themes into a new genre. Before we leave, let's turn to one more monument. The founder of the Persian Empire, Cyrus, built his tomb at the capital he created at Pisargadae. The tomb was built above ground on a stepped base that had six steps, perhaps recalling the form of a ziggurat. And one would enter the tomb chamber of Cyrus through a very narrow doorway. Roman sources describe it as part of a scene that describes Alexander the Great's behavior there. The tomb is surrounded by a grove of trees, and it has its own irrigation system to make sure that it is always well watered. Cyrus's body lay in a gold coffin, and this was laid in the tomb. Also laid in the tomb were carpets from Babylon, and this should recall for you all of those women weavers who were creating textiles in Babylon. Garments, tunics, trousers, which were a Median form of dress. Many purple robes. Purple was an especially costly dye. The tomb was guarded by magi, and this was a hereditary position. Part of the reward for guarding the tomb of Cyrus was that those who protected it would receive a sheep every day from the king, also grain and wine. Once a month, they would sacrifice a horse to Cyrus. Supposedly, there was an inscription that read in part, "I am Cyrus, who founded the Empire of Persia and ruled as king over Asia. Do not grudge me my monument." This inscription has not been found on the actual tomb of Cyrus. We come across this evocative description as the author, the Roman general Arrian, writes about Alexander the Great's campaign into Asia, which will be the subject of the next lecture. Alexander visited the monument after he became king of Persia, and he left a cloak for Cyrus as a gift. But then he sealed the door and transferred control for its security to his own men. This and many other acts were intended to legitimize Alexander's rule as a successor to his Achaemenid predecessors.